this might become a regular event on the podcast where we do topics from the listeners. From Gaynor Duncan, she says, your views on Windrush.
I have a working theory of the universe that the Windrush situation fits squarely into. When we talk about conspiracy theories, for instance, you know, there's always people who think somehow that, you know, you've got the Illuminati behind everything, pulling everybody's strings, and these great master plans that would have to involve thousands, if not millions, of people all conspiring together, and nobody ever gives anything away. And that's obviously mad bollocks. But what you do get in all political structures and hierarchies are small conspiracies of convenience. And it's the sight of these that leads people to think that there are larger conspiracies going on. And Windrush is a classic example of this. So what you actually had happen was you got a bunch of somewhat racist, don't like to think of themselves as racist, home county Tories in charge again. And they wanted to be hard on immigration because they're arseholes. And they appealed to arseholes, and they'd promised the other arseholes who'd voted for them that this was what they were going to do. So they construct an atmosphere in which harshness is the method that's going to be used. And they're expecting to actually target this probably at Polish people and Muslim people. Right? That's actually what they're aiming for. Let's be honest about this. But inadvertently, what happens is that they start to sweep up people who've lived here 45 years, who came over here when they were seven, who don't happen to have the correct paperwork, because up until now it was never an issue, because when they were born as British citizens. You would imagine that anybody nice and normal, the second they realise this is going on, would go, oh, fuck, that's not what we meant.
Yeah.
That's not what we wanted. Sort that out.
Yeah.
But they didn't. And the reason that they didn't is because they're Tories and they don't give a fuck. Because when it actually started to happen, they were managing to bring down immigration figures. Not through the method they intended or would have designed, but they didn't care enough because they weren't going to be affected by it. None of their mates was going to get sent to fucking Barbados. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't going to happen to them. And so those people were expendable. And so that is the conspiracy that you see. That little conspiracy whereby at the point that they realise what's happening, they don't do the right thing. They do the wrong thing. And then 5 years later, they're having to dig themselves out of it and promise to pay people compensation.
It's all legal until you get caught.
And that is the thing that you see over and over again in the world. The hanging chads thing and people being purged from voter rolls in 2000 in America, that's exactly the same thing. They wanted to tighten the voter rolls and get felons, as they call them, off the rolls. They actually end up, instead of taking off 8,000 or 10,000 people, they take off 100,000 people. But when they realise what they're doing, or most of those people are black, they don't do the right thing. It's not designed, but when they have the opportunity to do the right thing, they don't, because they're arseholes. That's my theory of the world.
I agree with all that.
Yeah, that was really swish. That was like completely. Normally on this podcast, it takes about 40 minutes to get to the fucking point, but you just absolutely nailed that thing in one little promo. Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Theresa May and Amber Rudd are at the heart of all this thing. Is this a case of, like, are they trying to emulate the very masculine tough talk on immigration?
No, just that women can actually be cunts too.
And that's the end of that.
Yeah.
Right, okay, the next question comes from Usman Akhtar, and he says, your thoughts on the new groups coming out of the SNP, like Neutral Scotland and Autonomy. Other than that, he also wants to know about the economic argument for Indy being shifted from the Nordics to New Zealand. That's quite a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. I think it is interesting. I don't know how big these groups are yet. Seem to be maybe just like, you know, one or two people behind each of them.
Do you know who they are? It's a good question, but I actually did read it and go, like, I don't know what Neutral Scotland is and I don't know what Autonomy is.
There's an article in Common Space about one of those groups. One of them is about... I can't remember which is which now, but one of them is like an anti-EU, a Eurosceptic SNP group.
Okay.
And the other one is an anti-NATO SNP group. But so, I mean, these are just starting off, so it'll be interesting to see how they pan out. There's definitely a big constituency there. Was it like 30% of SNP voters voted against the EU voted to leave.
Is this potentially damaging to the SNP, or do you think this is a, I think maybe that's what he's wanting to know. Do we think this is a positive thing, that there are kind of splinter groups within the SNP happening? Because the track record within Labour of this occurring is not good. The Labour has sort of, like, it's not really a party now so much as a sort of series of warring factions just yelling shit at each other. I wonder if Usman is expressing concern that the same thing could happen with the SNP if it divides itself up too much.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I hadn't heard of either of those groups, to be honest with you. But sorry, guys. But yeah. I think a little bit more diversity would probably do the SNP some good.
That's been a big criticism of the SNP from the unionist side, has been this monolithic Borg.
Yeah, but that force. Is just jealousy, because they're such a sack of fucking rats that can't fucking hold themselves together. Lack of discipline.
Yeah. I think it must be, like, if you're a unionist, or, like, dare say English, no offence, like, you must look at, like, a party that's actually, like, consistent in its message and just be like, what the fuck is that? Because, like, the Labour and Tories are such a fucking mess. Even the Lib Dems, like, everything's a fucking contradiction. Like, all the SNP are actually doing, it's like, oh, here's what we stand for. People have signed up to it because they agree with it, and that's the message. I do take the point that, yeah, you can kind of be critical and disagree with little things, but if you're weighing up that versus becoming, like, what the Labour Party now is, just a fucking riot. You know, I definitely think that the Sturgeon approach is possibly the better one.
Political parties need to be like mum and dad. They should not be fighting in front of the kids. They should have a good unified front. There should be diversity of opinions. There should be debate and discussion. That's all great. But they should basically all behave themselves and behave respectfully towards themselves. What's happening within the Labour Party is embarrassing. What's happening within the Conservative Party is ruining the country.
Yeah, I think
and the Lib Dems, well, who
cares? I think that's true as far as a political party is concerned. But I think the problem starts where people think of the SNP and the independence movement as being one and the same.
Yeah,
and
that's but they're not.
Where there's a kind of a bit of a problem with it, where everyone feels they need to fall in line with what the SNP are saying. And then they attack people who are saying, well, actually, I don't think the SNP are doing the right thing there. And then a big bun fight happens.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, in a way, yeah, you're right that it's good for from a political perspective that a party can keep a unified voice. But is that real in the SNP, or have they just been very good at controlling people who are dissenting?
I think
there going to be a bun fight that's just about to happen, unleashed upon the party, that could, you know?
It's always a danger, but I think in much the same way that for years right-wing political parties tended to be, because they're ruthless bastards, which is why they're in right-wing parties, they were always able to bow their own head for the greater good of their party. So although they might disagree, they would always, you know...
They really believe in hierarchy.
It said in America, you know, Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. If you're a nasty bastard and you've got nasty bastard aims, if you've got to do this or that or whatever, but to get to your nasty bastard aim, well, yeah, whatever, don't care. Whereas the problem with the left is always that it splinters, because they're all so busy trying to find the absolute perfect policy that they never get anything done. The entire message of the film The Life of Brian, which everybody, you know, took such umbrage with because they thought it was taking the piss out of religion. It wasn't. It was taking the piss out of left-wing political organisations and their propensity for, you know, that whole Judean People's Front pish.
So the question was, your thoughts on the new groups coming out of the SNP, like Neutral Scotland and Autonomy, are we kind of saying that they're a healthy balance for the independence movement, but the possibly for the SNP might be a bad thing for the party?
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care either. I don't know anything about them, and I don't really give a fuck.
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
Either way. So, yeah. Okay, so, power to you guys. If you fuck up the party, then we don't really give a shit either way, because we still support Scottish independence no matter what you guys have to say. So,
the independence movement was, I mean, the thing that made it lovely in 2014 was that it was this huge, varied melting pot of different bits and pieces of things. And you need organisations, you need people out campaigning. And I think that will come back when we do get another kick at the ball. But with regards to political parties, it's good that they have a disciplined front. And the complaints about it from other parties are only because they're jealous because they haven't got a disciplined front, is my opinion. Yeah. But with regards to the SNP splintering, that would be a bad thing, in my opinion. And I think it'd be a bad thing for Scottish independence, because I think actually the SNP have largely kept the head.
I think that what Nicola has done a very good job of is just doing government, which I know the libertarian room is now twitching angrily, going like, what do you mean? There's no such thing as doing government right. But I think actually by going like, here's the Independence Manifesto and here's us actually governing within the UK and making a separation of that, I think is really healthy. Yeah, I am kind of sceptical of if it's wise to fuck up that policies we have in place now under the UK government. I think if she's doing her best with that, and to conflate that with the arguments for independence, I think is a mistake. So if these groups were to come along and offer alternatives for independence, I think that's okay. Again, I would question the wisdom of sort of fucking up the internal workings of the SNP sort of just for the sake of it, mainly because of what you've just said there, that you're going to risk, you know, causing the same shit show that Labour's currently in.
Yeah.
So the next question, or the follow-on question from that, was the economic argument for Indy being shifted from the Nordics to New Zealand. Now, I don't know shit about this, so over to you guys on that.
Yeah.
I didn't know we had formally switched from Nordic to New Zealand.
Yeah,
I don't know who made that call.
I don't think that paper's been released formally yet, but the rumour was that it was going to be more focused on New Zealand rather than like Nordic countries, which had kind of previously been. This is a kind of like...
Are we just only going for places that have sort of moody crime dramas? Is that what it is? Straight from the Nordics to New Zealand?
You've got the big hills, hobbits.
Growing film industry. I don't know. The location of New Zealand would make me question that, because surely... Nordics isn't... It's far away, but it's not super far away, whereas New Zealand is, like...
Really. It's about as far away. Yeah.
It's a very isolated country that's not really in the heart of anything. Surely their economy is going to have to be set up radically differently from everyone else because of that.
Well, actually, potentially, their economy may well be set up quite similarly to Scotland's, because what the things that I do know about New Zealand is that it's got a relatively low population for its geography. Much of which is kind of rural, and there's a fair few sheep involved, I believe. You know, 3/4 of the people in New Zealand live in two places at opposite ends of the two islands from each other, and then there's 12 people in between in the countryside. The thing that New Zealand does potentially have to teach us about how to achieve independence is how they did it, which is they just quietly took more and more things on themselves. They never had a big referendum about it or anything. At one point, they just went, shall we tell them to fuck off? You have got just under half the population of Scotland would prefer for Scotland to be independent. And as time goes by, more kids are being brought up in an environment where that's considered normal, and the younger folk tend to be much more pro-independence, I'm sure, because of all the brainwashing going on in the schools, according to the Labour Party.
All hail Nicola. All hail Nicola.
Our mighty mid-sized Scottish woman.
It's great how the country that keeps advocating, we've got to fucking sing along with the God Save the Queen. It's talking about us being brainwashed. That's fantastic.
I know. There's a lovely thing I saw on YouTube, which is the trooping of the colour with the narration from them talking about North Korean military parades.
Yeah, we're a bit off topic, but I've been very intrigued about the potential what if they had not announced the referendum in 2014. I would have been interested to see if when they got in with all that huge SNP majority, if the media kept hounding them, going like, where's the independence referendum? You kept telling us you're going to have an Indy ref. Where is it? And you just let that go on. And it's almost like you wait for the public, you get them to the point where they're at fever pitch, and then you give it to them. The thing that always sort of bamboozled me about it was, what is the support level for Scottish independence? At the time, it was somewhere between like 25 and 35%. It was somewhere in there. So like, the audience don't want this. So you wonder if they just got in power, if they'd governed for a bit, you know, demonstrated that, one, they could do it, because keep in mind the SNP had no track record of government whatsoever. So we were not only basically taking a chance on them to govern the country, we were also taking a chance on them to secede the country from this other group of nations. It's a big ask, considering we don't really know who the fuck these people are yet. So I just wonder if you'd got like a track record under your belt over 4 years showing, look, we can govern, we're not fucking idiots, we can do this shit. And in the background, if you just use social media to drip, so not a formalised campaign, and then you'd got the public to round about 45 and then gone for it. So if you'd built that, at least, I mean, ideally over 50, but if you kind of got that kind of fever pitch of like, we really want it, whereas it just felt like we announced it, no one really gave a shit, and then slowly, like, 15 to 25% of people kind of gave more of a shit, but generally people didn't really give a shit.
No, I disagree. I think...
No one ever agrees with that take, but I think
you had to have the referendum. You had to have a date. You had to have a thing that people were building towards to get everybody G'd up. And I think it was also the best advertisement for the SNP that they could possibly want, in terms of it made everybody think about Scotland. I mean, people were really incredibly ignorant about Holyrood and its powers.
Yeah.
And now you've got actually an incredibly well-educated, you know, civically well-educated population in terms of understanding what our parliament does versus what our councils do versus what Westminster does versus what the EU does, which and I think it was an incredibly good strong civics lesson for the country. So no, I disagree, and I think it was a good thing. I think it was difficult to win in that environment. It was difficult if you lived in Shorelands and you saw all the yes posters like I did to come to terms with the fact that we hadn't won. And they threw everything at us in the last wee bit there. It was miserable. But we start from a much better basis for another one. We just need to be patient and pick the timing better. And now we need to do your plan. But we had to have that referendum first. Otherwise, we would just have never have moved.
So I guess the next question I'm going to ask is, when do you think the next Scottish independence referendum should be?
People keep saying, oh, you know, we're going to get the Tories again and that'll drive for Scottish independence. It won't, actually. It didn't last time if we weren't going to vote for it then. What will drive the people who are still on the fence towards Scottish independence is not yet another cunty Tory government. It'll be another shitshow Labour government. When another Labour government... Because there's a lot of people who are still living in hope that but we could have a Labour government and it would be all right. If we had a Labour government. Do you remember the last one?
You know what?
Right?
I wish I'd fucking thought of that. I wish that had been my evil plan all along. It's like, how come you supported Corbyn during the election? So I could fucking turn on him, because I knew the minute that fucker got in there, he'd balls the whole fucking thing up, and that is what is going to spur on independence. That is one of the best takes I've ever heard. Because everyone you ever speak to, you're exactly right. They're always saying, oh, we've got to get the Tories in.
While you've got hope, you don't have to take the difficult decision. You will only take the difficult decision when hope has been removed.
And you're right, if Corbyn gets in and it's a fucking shit show, as you see, and it likely will be, then yeah, you're going to go, well, it's either stick with this shit, vote for the Tories, and that's even worse, or Scottish independence. So yeah. I think I've never thought of it in that way before, but you're totally right that actually psychologically the best option is to get Labour in and then fucking go for it.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I'd fucking thought of that, because I would look like a fucking genius. I was so close, so tantalisingly fucking close to being right, but I was wrong.
I don't think Corbyn's a bad man, by the way. I think he's a pretty decent and genuine and principled man. But he is a product of a particular reasonably hard left kind of fist to the head Judean people's front mentality, right? And I've got no time for that whatsoever. I have views about certain things should be state owned and state run because private industry can't be fucking trusted, right? Like water. Private industry can't be trusted with water. It's too important. You know, railway infrastructure and things like that. Stuff like that, I want nationalised, right? But I don't want... You economically, you can't have more than about 40% of your economy nationalised, because the economics don't work, the taxation doesn't work. Taxation is generated in the private sector. Ergo, the private sector has got to be bigger than the public sector, or you're in a downward spiral of revenues.
I'm still kind of reeling from that that take. That is, I think... It's a stunningly obvious thing that I'm annoyed at myself for not thinking of, that it is. It's in the absence of hope that's... Now, is that... In saying that, though, is that a bit of a twisted take? Because we did cover Scottish independence, I think, on the first episode of this podcast, which you can find in the archives. we both all agreed, I think unanimously, that voting for independence on the back of someone else's failings is not necessarily a good thing. So to counter the point, I do agree that knowing what humans are like psychologically, that is absolutely fucking perfect and probably what is going to happen. But I think we were all kind of agreeing that you don't really want to vote for like Scottish independence because we get dragged out of the EU. You want to vote for it because it's a good thing, regardless of that issue, regardless of which government's in power at Westminster. It's just a good thing. So you're right, but I think the sadness involved in it is that the way this movement has been set up, it seems to be so focused on shitting on what we're not, it's sometimes not so great at celebrating what we are, and that sometimes is a bit crap. Because one of the things I do like sharing on Twitter and Facebook is we actually do something that's pretty cool, like when we launch a satellite into space, or we do this, or we do that, and like we're actually like bigging ourselves up. I sometimes find that more pleasant and enjoyable than just going, look at this fucking shit show down here.
One contrary take I have to that, potentially, is you get a Corbyn Prime Minister, right? The Labour have a landslide, and it's the Labour Scottish MPs and the SNP who gang up to make him not be able to do the things that he might have wanted to do. So then the take from the left is like, oh, look, it's actually the SNP that are the problem here. It's actually the Scottish MPs that are the problem in Labour. So it's not, you know, if you go independent, you'll just be run by New Labour.
Can I just say as well that in no universe do I actually think Corbyn is going to be Prime Minister. The one thing the Tories are really good at doing is holding on to power, where after the election, I have to say, I did think, fuck me, Theresa May is going to be gone in a fortnight. And then when she wasn't, I started to pay attention to what was actually happening. I thought, no, they're going to hang in there. They're going to hang in there. But it's not going to be Corbyn. It will end up being some Blairite, middle of the road, appeal to the home counties fuck. And that is the thing that I think would actually poison the well finally for Westminster. Not actually a firebrand left-wing prime minister. It'll be the absence of one of those. It's when we still, you know, like we get another Labour government and it's still not Labour. It's still not the Labour that we want. It's not that, you know, I agree with that, actually.
Because I think that, certainly in terms of achieving Scottish independence, I think that that's dead on. Because I think that if Corbyn was in power and NDRF2 happened, I think a Corbyn versus Sturgeon type situation would shatter the left, I think, is the difficulty with it. Whereas under those conditions, if we have, as you say, your Blairite, your New Labour dude up there, well, you're not really shattering the left, because the left are kind of united and going like, fuck this guy, we're going to back this. Whereas there are still people that I've spoken to in Scotland. I mean, most of us, I think, now have definitely woken up to the fact that Corbyn is not what we
He's not all that. Yeah.
He's not all that. But I mean, that is recent though. I mean, literally only in a matter of the past couple of months. So we're recording this now in sort of late April 2018. And it's really only been in really the last couple of months that I've actually really had people that have defended that guy strongly on the left, really Labour affiliated or not, have finally had to concede that he is not the Messiah. The question was the economic argument. I don't know enough about the economic argument to really answer that, but I think, are we concluding the gradualist?
Well, the controversy about the changing it to be New Zealand was that they had a more kind of economically liberal view, more kind of, you know, low tax, you know, privatisation type stuff.
They think that would be more appealing to people than the Nordic, it's £15 for a pint of lager sort of approach.
It undermines the unionist argument that you cannot be a successful small country. I think that's the value of showing places like New Zealand and, you know, like your Singapore and Hong Kong and places like this. You know, all of these countries are successful. They're all different. Scandinavia, it's, you know, there's a lot of kind of free market stuff that goes on there. They're all very different. They all choose their own way. And that's what my argument is that you can choose your own way and you can be a successful country. You can do things in lots of different ways and still be economically successful. Where's the list of countries that have, like, seceded and then just been a complete disaster?
One thing that I love about the libertarian take is just how you are so effective at throwing a lot of the Tories' own argument back in their face. Because, like, the Tories are the first to speak out against the idea of, like, handouts. But the way they paint, like, Scotland, it's just, like, England's the sugar daddy.
Yeah.
And it's really cool how, like, the libertarian or that, again, vaguely more fiscally conservative, whatever terminology you prefer, like, that's something that I think the independence movement would benefit much more from, because by framing it as being its lefty central, sadly, a lot of the population in Scotland, they're not all lefties. A lot of them are kind of more right-wing thinkers. And actually, by dropping more of that stuff into the argument, I absolutely think it's beneficial, because if you take their own stuff and you spin it and throw it back and they haven't got a comeback for it, that's when you actually really start to win.
Yeah.
You know, you start just kind of shooting their arguments out of the sky. That's when you're doing it right.
Yeah, and you know what you're talking about? There's across the world, there's a whole ream of small countries who are incredibly economically successful, and they're all doing it in different ways. And do you know what they all have in common? They're all small countries. Being a small country gives you much more of an ability to be an economically successful country, because you can shift policy much more easily, you can change direction much more easily. Yeah. You're nimble in a way that the likes of America can never be. It can't be nimble because it's just too massive. It's too massive.
That's why I think that a lot of the libertarian arguments that I'm not, you know, some of the wilder end of it, maybe not so keen on. But equally, like, it's a simple analogy. It's like, if we, like, locally in our street want to organise or change a certain way the bins are done or a certain way we clean the street, we can do that. If I have to try and do, like, the whole council or the whole city, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And the argument that a lot of libertarians have, because the lefty is, like, fucking centralise everything, like, it does get to a point where it becomes... it's so fucking irritating trying to do anything, because it's like stalemate. And there is a real valid argument that some of the best human progress happens when you just let humans just do their own shit and fucking leave them alone.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying I fully agree with all of it, because a lot of the left stuff I'm really into, but I'm able to hear arguments from both sides, and it annoys me a wee bit that certain publications and websites within the Yes Movement are unwilling to give these people a platform, because I am convinced that that other 50 or so percent of Scotland that are not voting yes right now, if you present those arguments to them, holy shit, you'll see a massive jump in the polls.
I did notice when they started talking about New Zealand, everyone's like, New Zealand is shit! New Zealand is garbage! And it's like, why are you slagging off?
Have you ever been to New Zealand?
Independent small country.
Yeah, it's like, you're fucking on well.
We want independence, but not like that!
You're like, you might have criticisms of the way they've done things, but it's still just another example of, you know, a different way of doing things well, you know?
Yeah, no, just, exactly.
You know, calm down.
calm down.
Right. Okay, you got something to round this one off then?
No, I did, and it's gone.
Oh, shit. Gone. Oh,
it's wandered off. I had an idea.
You round that thing off there. Okay.
It wasn't New Zealand. It was small countries.
Lefties. Libertarians.
Radical democracy. That was it.
There we go.
For much the same reason that I want Scotland to be independent, I would like a massive split up of all the kind of council structures. And you know what you're talking about? If you can organise the bins for the street, you can fucking do whatever you do what you wanted and suit yourself and it be convenient. The problem with larger structures, like massive, massive metropolitan councils, is that you end up with somebody having to take a central decision that ends up by trying to account for everybody being convenient for nobody. And it'd be much better to have much smaller councils.
Yeah, I'm of that opinion.
Certainly I think in Germany, you know, there's a sort of a council for kind of every 8,000 people or something like that. So the chance of being involved in a representative democracy is much greater, and people are more involved locally in things. And I think
the SNP have not been good in terms of they've been a very centralising force.
Yeah.
And I can kind of understand.
Again, it's the kind of discipline, and I understand why.
Perspective, but they should probably be looking at places like Switzerland where they've got, you know, kind of canton structure or.
Yeah, so we have to run this one off then. So I think what we're kind of seeing is that whether you like the Nordic argument or the New Zealand argument, they're both valid arguments, and it's all fine. So yes. I don't quite know why he says here the Indy argument has shifted economically from the Nordics to New Zealand. I'm not convinced that's actually happened.
No, it's just an official paper. I don't know where the group is. SNP have kind of like paid for this paper to be put out.
Yeah, it's still just an opinion. So I think, again, it's what we're sitting here about, the difference between SNP and Indy. It's like, no, that's maybe the SNP's argument now. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the independence argument.